I intended to make it a PowerPoint, but while I was making a few days back, my computer fell and everything went with it. So it's somewhat of a digression for me, this topic, because I'm not a cosmologist. But let me tell you what I plan to do today. So the main thing is I want to give you an expression for a two-point function in FRW Bacon in the presence of in non-commutative spacetimes. So this is the main point, what I want to tell you. And this is, of course, because you have preferred theta, this will give you anisotropy. And if you calculate four-point functions, you also find that there is non-Gaussianity. And what I did myself was, so here I will just make some comments, like these should be there. So this is, these should be there, but I haven't done any numerical calculation. What I tried to do myself was to compare it with angular power spectrum. So CLs, so it's hard to see anisotropy in CLs, the effect. But I'll give you some estimate on some kind of bound on the NID scale of the non-commutativity parameter. So why it's something which I'm doing is because I can calculate this expression. This is a rather easy expression, and it's something quite neat. Before, what I have seen in literature is that people just, when they talk about non-commutative effects in CMB, they just talk about non-commutativity, and then they just do random things, like just introduce some direction, some anisotropy somewhere, or some fudging with the fields. It's not really something derived from non-commutativity. But with some new developments, we can have this expression quite generically, and it's quite robust. And the thing is that this is true even for the at the tree level. You can calculate, because what happens usually, why people don't do it is because usually in the usual formulation, at the tree level, there's nothing there. It's just like usual theory. You only get non-commutative effects when you go to interactions. But once you go to interactions, you encounter UVIR mixing, you don't know what to do. There's not much you can do. But the formulation I have will give some result even at tree level, and then you can compare it. So how can you have result at tree level? That means you have some, so the only way it can have occur in tree level is that because you have different commutation relation between fields. So like at space-like separations, fields don't commute as before. So what we are doing is changing the statistics. So let me call it twisted statistics, which gives you this, or in other words, changed commutation relations between fields. And where does it come from? It comes from symmetry considerations. Half symmetry on non-commutative spaces. So I'll start from here, just to tell you that how do you get this two-point function, and then I'll explain this. Hope I'm not going too slow. So you can, why to consider non-commutative spacetimes? Well, you can, I'm sure you know the arguments given in favor of non-commutativity, like at strong gravity, when you try to resolve something at very small distances, then you are putting a lot of energy or high wavelength probes there, and that if you go down to Planck scale, you find that you have put energy, so much energy that you form black holes there. So you have then limits on the resolution you can have. Similarly, if you want to resolve a small interval of time, again, you need a very high energy probe there, and that will create black holes. So either you can measure a small interval of time or a small interval of space. So there are uncertainty relations between. So these are greater than some fundamental length scale. You can make these arguments more precise. You can work with field theory models, and you find that it actually does happen when you try to resolve things with some field. You do form black holes, and there are uncertainty relations. So if there are uncertainty relations, that means the coordinates do not commute. And a simple form is when you have a very simple commutation relation between the coordinates, where theta mu nu is a constant. So what you then do is, what you can do is map the functions on this algebra to ordinary functions. So you map this algebra to ordinary functions, but you change the product between the functions. So what it means to have, equivalently, you can describe non-commutative spaces by algebras where you change the product. So you multiply two functions, not by just dot product, but what's called a star product. No, it's just modeling this. So you believe that there is some non-commutative structure for space-time at small scales. So now you want to model that. So I model that by this equation, and then instead of working with operators, I work with functions and this deformed product. So what this will give me, if I use this product instead of these operators, I just take usual functions. It will give me this automatically. So it's just an isomorphism. I'll work this with these functions because then I can easily write field theories.
Encoding the fact that you'll form black holes. Right? I mean, the non-commutativity comes from the fact that you're forming the black holes.
But maybe non-commutativity can suppress the production of black holes inside. That is what
it's like.
That is a possibility. It's not. I mean, if it will suppress the production of black holes, but it will still have this. Resolution, this restriction on resolution. So it's kind of avoiding that singularity and putting it in a something regular manner.
Regular.
Yeah.
you said theta is a constant, so it commutes with x?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the computational relations you get from like DSR models wouldn't fit into this scenario?
You can write star properties for those also. It's not a problem.
But then theta would be like the Lorentz generator, so.
Yeah.
And you're assuming throughout this talk that theta is constant to that.
I'm playing with this thing, but whatever I'm doing, it works even if theta is not a constant.
Even if it's not a constant.
Yeah.
Right.
Is there some reason like one stops the commutator of the position operators? Why not assume non-commutativity for momentum observers?
You can do that also. I believe these DSR Kapper-Minkowski spacetimes. I guess there are things like those. So from here you can write field theory actions. All you do is wherever you have product, you replace star product. Things like those. But so from this action, what people then do is just quantize it, just put it in a functional integral and calculate the correlators, and then you run into all kinds of trouble, like UVIR mixing. But where I want to go is so if you look at this action is not, first of all, it's not invariant under Lorentz symmetry. So Lorentz or Poincare symmetry is not automorphism of this algebra. Now, if this Lorentz symmetry is not there, then what is the basis of writing this action? You can think of it as a deformation, but what you want to get is that you have something fundamental at the smaller scales, and which in the limit gives you the normal action. So if I take the theta going to zero limit of that action, it gives me a Lorentz invariant action. But where does it come from? There's no symmetry principle to write this action in the first place. So it is probably desirable that you have some symmetry which in the limit, which gives you that action, and in the limit it goes to Lorentz symmetry. So first of all, Lorentz group does act on these fields because they are just ordinary fields. But the problem is, X star. This is not equal to it's not equal to that. So I want to generalize the concept of symmetry in such a way that I have some symmetry here. So there's a new concept of symmetry which are called half symmetries. Maybe I should go to there. And I think I'm running quite late. So,
is the intuitive reason why Lorentz symmetry is broken the fact that you have now preferred length scale L? So, of course, if you make Lorentz boost, you would normally get Lorentz contraction, but L is supposed to be a fundamental length scale. Planck length now would not be invariant of the Lorentz boosts.
Well, these arguments, they don't give you a length. They probably give you something of a volume. So that's not a problem. But the thing is that once you introduce this constant theta, you are putting something which doesn't transform under Lorentz symmetry. So you have lost Lorentz symmetry.
Right, but physically.
Physically.
I mean, it goes back to the black hole thing. If I have a particle that ostensibly in my frame doesn't have the energy to resolve, then I make a huge Lorentz boost.
Yeah.
Suddenly it looks like it has enough energy.
To, yeah.
So then you would have this issue of forming the black hole would be kind of boost dependent, which obviously would be a problem.
Yeah, it seems like. True. Yeah. So you see that the Leibniz rule is failing here. When you transform two fields separately, they don't go like when you transform their product. So what I want to do is look at the Leibniz rule in a new way. So I define, so what does Leibniz rule does for me? If I have a product of two functions, here this M stands for taking products, and I transform them, it tells me how to transform the two fields individually. And then taking the product. So this is something living in, if G is my group, G cos G. Well, actually, you should consider the universal cover of G. So it tells you how to transform. So it has one component, this one acting here, this one acting here, how to transform those two and multiply and get. And of course, if it makes sense to this, for this to make sense, you must have that this delta is a group homomorphism.
M0?
Let me just, this is just multiplication. Some kind of, so in the usual case, usually we have this delta of G is equal to G cross T. So you just transform those two separately, or for a linear algebra element.
Sorry, what is M?
M is multiplication. It's a multiplication map on this tensor product. So it takes F tensor G to F dot G. Here I'm just considering general multiplication, can be star product. So the thing is, so we saw that for star product, if this is star product, let me put theta for star product. Then, and this delta G is this usual one, then this doesn't hold, this fails. But probably you can find some other delta, theta, which is still a homomorphism, so that it will give you correct group property. Your group will still act on this space through this delta theta, but it will fulfill this equation. So it will give you a rule how to transform functions, products of functions. So this is the game, to find this delta theta. Now, if you think about it, it's a rather different from what is automorphism. So it's really a new concept of symmetry, because in automorphism if you have two elements of an algebra, if you change this, you demand that the product, that this change is preserved under this product, the structure of your algebra. But here you're introducing another thing from outside about how to act on these. You don't take just the internal structure of the algebra. But these coupled, they are quite natural in quantum theory. So for example, you have to think about tensor product of spaces. Maybe it's your multiparticle states or your fields at two points. So when you act on these by some group action, it has to come by some coproduct. Because here on TensorBoard, there's no algebraic structure so that you talk about some automorphism or anything. You have to give a rule how to act on these. And it has to come by some coproduct. Usually we take G by G, G cross G. Why? Because it works. Our world looks like this. So this defines you the representation on TensorBoard. This gives you your Clebsch coordinates. But a priori, there's no reason to take G cross G. It can be something else. So for example, you have some representation on fields. You take it by this del. You may want to multiply those fields. So it seems that this thing is not something totally crazy. It does make some sense that probably it is some right way to think about symmetries. Because the thing is that for the usual coproduct, which we are used to work with, these two match. So you cannot distinguish. So in the end, it's the experiment which can tell you which one is the correct way to do. So I think I should hurry up. So is there any question? Or is it clear, or is it just too confusing?
So you were mentioning that there is some new symmetry.
New concept of symmetry. So one thing you should note about is that, so this structure I call half algebra.
So is there a generalization of a Noether's theorem here?
Yeah.
Okay. So one has half charges?
Yeah. Let me answer the question. So this half algebra has these two things. It has group and it has coproduct. It tells you how to act on tensor product of spaces or on products of functions. This G is not touched. It's still the same. So for example, if you take the Lorentz transformation, they will have exactly the same structure. You will have all those charges there. It's only how they act that is changed. So as I just said, that the group structure is not changed, only how they act is changed. And for this,
it changes how it acts on two particles.
Yeah, two particle, three particle. On one, yeah, it's same, exactly same. Yeah, because coproduct doesn't come into play on one particle. It defines tensor product of representations. what did I want to say? Yeah. So let me just write it by this diagram. So what you want is if you have these two functions, you multiply them and you get this thing. this should give you same as transforming this product function. If you go this way through this curve product, you should come to the same thing. So for when this is equal to that product, the thing to note about that product is that it can be written as M naught F. Let me write it a bit. Okay, like that. Because those P mu gives me these derivatives in this star product. Where did it go? Yeah. So those P mu gives me these derivatives. So I can write it like that. But then this belongs to this universal cover. So I can write the coproduct. So in this case, the coproduct which fulfills this thing is given by F inverse, the usual one, time F. So if I take that coproduct and then I transform my functions by this rule, they are like that action is invariant under this new Hopf symmetry.
What is that mean?
Excuse me?
What is that mean?
Yeah, P mu, P mu.
And what's rho in this diagram?
Rho means some representation by which you act on your functions. So like here, this P is an abstract element of the algebra. But when it will act on these functions, it will act by some representation. For example, if it acts by a regular representation, it's just a derivative.
So this top line, del x on alpha? I mean, del x.
Del gives you an element in group cross group. And then this representation x on this. This x on this. This x on this. But this may not be this symbol. It may be a series. Like this one, it's an infinite series. I think I should. So you have this concept of Hopf symmetry, but the most important thing for me right now is that once you have this symmetry, this coproduct is also related to the statistics of your theory. So, for example, if you want to, so suppose you take a two-particle state. You want it to be related to the other one by something, some phase. Usually, you take this to be independent of these k1, k2. But you want this relation to remain invariant under your Lorentz transformation or any transformation you're considering. So this is super selected. So if you have some vector here and you go to the other one and it's related to some other one, like this one, then if you go to a new frame, these new ones should still be related. So if you exchange two particles in this frame and you boost, it should still be those two particles. It should not change into some other state. So it turns out that the usual statistics which you take, like bosonic or fermionic, is not compatible with this coproduct. You also have to change the statistics. And what you need to take, if you're just taking three particles, is something like, so this flips. Let me write it in this way. So if you flip two particles, you generate this momentum dependent phase. So this is so you need to take care of that statistics too. So with all these ingredients, I want to construct a field theory which is invariant under this symmetry. I think I have to erase this. So I want to have, so I have these generators which induce my transformations with this representation with Koch order. So for example, I can go to in and out states, in states or out states. I define those there, and I give them like statistics, and I define a scalar product which is compatible with this statistics. So in the end, what I find is that these commutation relations are changed if I write it in the form of a quantum field. All I need to do is, so if I take I take the usual quantum field, it can be the full field or it can be N or free field or anything. The P will be accordingly that P. I transform this, I dress this field by this operator here. This will take care of the statistics and it will give you the right transformations, everything. So this is my starting point. So this defines my non-commutative theory. By the way, this can be done for any non-commutativity which can be written as a twist. All you need for any f, all you need to do is that on the for any f, you take this to be operator and this to be representation on the left. So you can do it with Kappa-Minkowski or whatever you want. So I take this and I just compute. Say again? Yeah. So this is something very generic. You can take the full field and do it. There's nothing like very difficult here. So it, the answer is quite generic, and you can compare it. So what I do is I just take, I write that field. And I compute its two-point function. Gives me So this, for example, can be your scalar emetic perturbation in this non-commutative background. So this one will be equal to your regular ones, but with this something acting on it. And when you compute it for, so let me go to, momentum space. So now I'm just trying to mimic what is done in a textbooks. You take your metric perturbations, scalar perturbations, you go to to momentum space, and the two-point function gives you the power spectrum. But here, the two-point function will be changed. And what you get is I probably want to calculate it at the same time. So what I have used here is the spatial homogeneity to kill some of these derivatives, but I haven't assumed time translation because I'm in FRW. So you see that this two-point function becomes non-local in time, and the time dependence is different for each mode. Yeah. For the background, I'm just assuming it's approximately just a manifold. And on top of that, I'm writing these fields, which will be not consistent. First of all, well, there are many levels to this. To answer this, there is a GI formulation for non-commutative spacetimes, but I will not go into that here. But what you can do is you just take some background. So whatever you get from non-commutativity, it will approximate the your regular space times.
No, we have calculated that for a long time before computing, and we found connections in the background.
I'm not saying they will be not.
It means that you're not going to respect like frequent operations like that because that's certain.
Well, let me answer it in two ways. There is a formulation of non-commutative geometry, which gives you the same, which can give you same solutions as the usual one. And secondly, what I'm doing is I'm just considering effects on these fields. I'm assuming, for example, there are some extra corrections to metric. But I'm not just worried about those. I'm just calculating them on this field. So the whole idea of doing this non-commutative field theory is that you are modeling these effects which are generated by this non-commutativity. And I have put them all in the field theory. I agree, there may be corrections to metric, but the first order correction is itself for the metric perturbation is again this. So the main question is now, what is the background? Now the background will be corrected only it will not be corrected by a large amount. It will be just corrected by theta.
Well, I was going to say, if you break Lorentz invariance, it's not clear that the background has to be only corrected by a small amount. If I do a Lorentz boost of a Robertson-Walker universe, I can get something very non-Robertson-Walker. That's okay in GR, but in your theory, that won't happen. Right? So,
no, I have Lorentz transformations, these new ones.
Yeah, GR isn't invariant under these new Lorentz.
It is. So the Lorentz invariance, the standard Lorentz invariance is broken here because these thetas are standing there. But there is this new concept of symmetry which is there.
But it's also in standard GR, this new symmetry payment?
No.
Yeah, so that's my point. Anyway, so this is kind of just a test field formulation.
Say again?
I mean, if you want to do an inflationary fluctuation, it's really you want to call like metric fluctuation as well. So is it fine?
Yeah. I'll take them to be fluctuations of the metric.
What are all these questions about GR? I'm confused.
I said that there is a formulation of GR in this whole framework. You can do that. You will find that the metric perturbations, I'm not sure that you will get exactly the same background. Maybe you can have a FRW background in that theory, or maybe you not. But in any case, when you consider the perturbations, they will have this feature.
Actually, we want to nearly consider background, right?
Yeah.
So you were saying something that you assume homogeneity?
Yeah.
So I'm starting to confuse, like, how is it consistent with non-commutativity of the
non-commutativity.
Why is homogeneity of space consistent with non-commutativity of your position operators?
Well, I'm not really giving the position operators there. All I have this field. This field is the test field which fields all these effects. So I went to these functions. Once you assume that there can be a background, a metric field. So the background space-time, so you have this algebra of functions. So suppose you consider these coordinates, which are your usual co-moving coordinates. On these coordinates, it's just some, unless you put a matrix, it's just some R4. You can put an algebra here. On this algebra, I go to start order formulation, and I can do all these things, and it will capture all those. The only thing is that on this algebra, you have to put a matrix. So is there a background matrix there? That's what I'm, which is FRW. That is what I'm leaving out.
How do you identify these as metric fluctuations?
I told you that metric fluctuations will again have this feature. They will have this property.
So are you actually, is what you want to present to us a model where you just look at what happens to metric, the modification to metric fluctuations because of this correction.
Yeah.
So you're not going to try to source inflation. You're not going to couple a field to the metric.
I'm going to do that.
Metric
fluctuation? Yeah, I can do that. That's not a problem. Well, as I said, that to the first approximation, I'm taking this background to be FRW. And secondly, there is a formulation of GR where not much happens when you put this theta there because of all these symmetries which are there.
If there is such formulation of GR, why don't we get exactly the same predictions?
Exactly same as what?
As FRW was modeled.
Well, I haven't solved those equations. Those are hard. But it seems like you
so
can get.
It is not GR, that is something else.
It is GR non-commutative space time, yeah.
It's symmetric theory of gravity on non-commutative space.
Yeah, if you want
it's
to.
It's not GR.
Yeah, some GR. Some action.
And you said you didn't even know if Robertson Walker was a solution of that, that new theory.
Yeah, that I don't know. I'm that leaving it, that out. I'm just taking that those corrections will be higher order. I just take the normal solutions. So this your background will have the usual G, and on top of that there will be some higher order correction to the background.
Is there sort of a scaling argument why you expect those are higher order?
Well, because to the first order, your action will be just usual Einstein action.
Why don't you show us how to relate this two-mode function with the standard one? Maybe then we can try to extract some physics.
This two-point function with the standard one. Well, what I'm going to do is just, since I have this standard one here, and all I did was change these arguments. So I'm going to relate this standard one to the standard physics.
So is it possible that I can somehow take out this theta as some function times the standard two-point function?
Yeah, that will, I will get that.
But that's still at the operator level, perhaps. Still has to do some.
It's an operator. It's a function.
No, it's a 2-point function. It's expectation value. So since I'm running out of time, let me just tell that. What I do here is just take the usual background and consider these fluctuations on top of that. And I know that these fluctuations will have, the two-point function will be modified by these factors. So I just do the usual thing. Now I'm going to skip all these standard calculations because not much goes there except that you use that two-point function. And what you get is so your power spectrum is modified by this factor. So first of all, you see that it's an isotropic. So you can compare it with So these are the temperature correlation modes. So you see that this is an isotropic. So the correct thing to look for this effect, if you want to put a limit on theta, is to calculate these and compare with the data.
Sorry, originally theta was a two-index object, right? A
yeah.
Now you've got a vector.
Oh, yeah, because this is. This theta I is theta 01, theta 02, theta. This is the time part.
You said all the others to zero, is that right?
No, I did not. Because of the homogeneity, they were killed.
So they are zero by homogeneity, is that what you're saying?
They're not zero by homogeneity. You don't see them at two-point function level. You will see them in four-point functions.
So do you have any intuition about physically what this vector represents?
It just represents a direction in space, a preferred vector.
But why is that related to the time-like part of? Because I mean, homogeneity isn't compatible with a preferred direction, i.e.
Why not? If you have.
Certainly not compatible with Robert's Walker, let me maybe put it that way.
If you have a field like that. Yeah, I have said it again and again. I'm assuming this background. And on top of that, there is some small vector on that.
Oh, so it's like doing a magnetic, coherent magnetic field in Robert's Walker. So it's inconsistent, but you argue that it could be made consistent if you did it properly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing something very rigorous here. I just take this two-point function, and I see that it gives me a model which has an isotropy, a preferred direction in space. So if I can calculate that, and certainly I assume people are calculating that, You can put limits on theta. And it also gives me non-Gaussianity, because when you compute four-point functions, you find they don't separate into two-point functions.
So but
you can test that too.
Why does homogeneity kill this theta as well?
Because you don't have translation invariance in time direction.
So is theta not a time-like vector field? I mean, it isn't. I guess I don't understand why theta is a space-like vector.
So sorry, you have one moment. So you have so this theta mu nu, you can write it as epsilon mu nu. Two vectors. Yeah. Only you have some coefficients here. So you can always bring it to this form where you have this log diagonal forms. You have these. So you have these two planes in your four-dimensional space. So I'm orienting one of these in time direction. So this one gives me that space-like vector. So if you expand this, you have the thing is that I suspect that people have done a lot of work on, well, you know better. I saw this formula in one of the papers by Shen Carroll and what's the other? Yeah, exactly. It has about like 60, 70 citations. So probably people are following it up. So this comes from here. They just start from here. They just write a general, they just put a general vector there. And of course, they don't have this H here. It's just some variable for them. What I did myself, because the thing is that I installed this CMB Easy code, CMB Easy, and it doesn't allow me to calculate those things. All it does is compute the power spectrum. And I compared, I did some simulations on that. And what you find is that theta is greater than 10 JeV. Oh, sorry, it's the 1/1.
Theta is the norm of the today.
Yeah, just the energy scale, the length, if you convert it into energy scale. But there are some loose ends in there. The thing is that when you do the Monte Carlo on the entire space of parameters, you don't get a good anything, any bond from there, because you already have like 7, 8 parameters. You put another one, you fit one graph, what you're going to get from that. So what I did was assume some the best fit value for most of them, and just vary theta, try to see that how does the power spectrum change. It seems like you get a limit like this. This is not something bad, because I think from particle physics experiment, it's even lower. And when, if you do this one, and the thing is that it's not the right way to look for this anisotropy. If you do this one, you will certainly get a much better answer. So that's all I have to say.
Why you don't modify x, mu, and p mu? You have to modify, right? There should be an additional
correction, otherwise you have algebra not close.
Why not? Because you don't modify p mu and p mu anyway.
Yeah. So, but this is a constant, so it doesn't matter. If you have non-constant, then
if
probably.
If you have non-constant, you have correction.
Yeah.
So wouldn't you think like if it is, so more general thing will be to take theta of x,
yeah,
something.
And yeah, of
you
course.
Put a constant, then you should get IH bar plus some correction to the x mu p mu relation.
Yeah, probably you. Yeah, you should get some corrections.
And that will anyway affect in your Fourier modes and come any come everywhere.
Yes, but I mean, this is the most easiest thing, most naive thing to look for.
If you put theta space dependent, then you break homogeneity, presumably, by fear.
Yes. Well, I personally don't agree with this philosophy, because the thing is that, I mean, this part, like this two-point function in this theory, this is something very robust. This is not going to change. But what I don't agree with this all this game is, you get this thing, but so what? Anything, any vector in space, it can come from all kinds of things. So why to attribute it to non-commutativity? The only thing is that once you constrain that, you're also constraining non-commutativity.
So that goes to this question before, if you had taken properly into account the modification to the background, given from the kind of algebra that you have chosen for this non-commutative space of various case, then you could constrain this kind of model, because you don't have only the vector, but you have as well the background, which has been dictated from the kind of algebra that you have chosen.
But how do you know that what kind of thing you will get? You can get some non-gauss energy, some.
And then you have to see what you find out.
Yeah, but I don't think you can really rule out. I mean, test your models using cosmology. All you can do.
If you can test your model, you cannot say whether this is the only kind of source of the results that you will find. But
yeah, that's what I said. You can put limits
it's
on.
It's even more vague than you think, because you take account one part of the problem.
What formulation of gravity you have?
Sorry?
How do you formulate gravity on non-commutative
space? Well, you have to think they're going to find the what is the gravitational part of it.
No, I'm just asking how do you formulate that?
It depends on how you want to write your algebra for the non-commutative space.
No, how do you write the Einstein action?
Then you have to see what action you have. I mean, this is this model by a length constant with respect to action.
Yeah.
This kind of for formal gravity is some kind of extra dense.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. I left out the background part.
It depends on gas. If you have a more complicated model, then you are going to find more complicated collections to put on the question. So it's,
I totally agree that there is this part.
Because you see, these collections are tiny. I mean, all the same things on the first document, there is more. So any kind of thing that you leave out there can affect the results. We're talking for very small time. The number of scientists is even more time to human, it's extremely tiny.
So yeah, but I thought an isotropy is pretty tight, I mean, because, no?
It is. So, I mean, the collection that you can find, you can change things.
No, but that will constrain the model more tightly, isn't it?
So looking at your formula for the past session, I'm trying to understand how you got from the work function to your anisotropic power. It looks like the anisotropy is coming in through the time argument, that for different directions of k, you're evaluating phi at different times.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that in your final formula, you don't have any kind of dependence on the slow roll parameters. Because, for instance, in the limit that phi, which I assume we're taking to be the implicon field, in the limit that it's not rolling at all, in the limit that it's totally constant, then you're not going to have any effect, I wouldn't think, because your only modification comes in the time argument. So if the time argument, if phi doesn't depend on time at all, it would seem like you would have no modification whatsoever. So that's, I'm surprised in your final power, I would think that you would have a slow roll parameter or something that depends on phi dot in some way, and I don't see it there.
Another way to put that is, what is that h? Is that h of t, or when is that h?
This is at the end of inflation.
Well.
Yeah, then it's exactly what Adrian's just saying.
Anytime when you're calculating something that is dependent on phi varying in time, is this is to be, you're going to be suppressed by orders of slow roll parameters. So I don't really know how you got from there to there. Introducing some slow
parameters.
Well, there's this issue about the sitter, are the two-point functions actually constant? This is like a back reaction issue. I mean, there are some subtleties about because you wouldn't have the sitter invariant state, practically, you wouldn't be in the sitter invariant state.
Well,
In the formula, there are at some places, because I'm not very familiar with all these calculations, there are slower parameters at intermediate steps. But in the end, somewhere, when you combine things,
it seems in the limit that phi dot goes to zero, your anisotropy should also go to zero.
But it seems that you took this at the end of the place,
Yeah.
So it might be that he took this lower parameter for two arms and replaced with zero.
So that just seems like physically. Does that mean that only the K modes that left the horizon right at the end of the inflation are going to be affected? Because then you're not looking for you're looking for modulation is also dependent on K.
That's possible, maybe that's good. That doesn't seem even harder to observe, because now you also major the larger scales. So this low roll parameter is the phi dot, it's related to phi
it's
dot.
It's related to phi dot, yeah.
Yeah, but when you relate the scalar, the electron perturbations to the scalar modes, then you have phi dots there also.
Yeah, so there's a cancellation.
Yeah.
Is that sort of happening? It's still weird then. Okay.
Because what about this? I'm using this at some point.
Okay, so yeah, so you're saying that in the normal calculation for this scalar power spectrum, you have a 1 over epsilon parameter already there, and that's dividing up the epsilon parameter that's going to come in from this modification. Then this thing's going to be nice. Because now you're saying that this modification, that p, you're saying that p naught is not the scalar mode power modification. You're saying because that should also, that p naught should already include the 1/ε that you usually get in the normal calculation. If you're canceling out that 1/ε to get rid of the epsilon, you got a new modification. Then that P naught is going to be more the tensor power spectrum power, not the scalar power spectrum.
No, but the scalar power spectrum, why is it? I mean, it doesn't depend on the.
It depends what you define P naught there. Aren't omega tensors that are going to be metric fluctuations in the
circuit. So the argument might not.
No, this P naught, usually when you write this scaling the power spectrum, don't you in the end combine all the things into just 1 over k and the h at the end of inflation?
H of k.
Each mode is evaluated when that mode left the horizon. Yes, yeah, that's true. Then it enters the horizon. Yes, that's what I'm doing also. Yeah.
Okay, so that H is an H of K.
Yeah.
I mean, if H is perfectly constant, then I would say that there should be no difference.
No, but the thing is that you can automatically use the same argument to calculate the nothing. So your argument is if I take phi dot to zero, I shouldn't get any correction. Like the same.
Okay, let's not take the limit, let's just say epsilon tends to minus 5, then everything should work, right? Yeah, as I can say, there's no epsilon.
There's no suppression there. And so what he's claiming is that the...
No, but why do you think that this should be the... Because...
15 years of study.
Yes, no, I'm just trying to understand. Because when you take this epsilon to zero, your modes are just constants.
Well, all t's are equal in that case.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the limit epsilon goes to zero. It doesn't matter when you evaluate the field. The field is really constant.
Yeah.
But
when you get the power spectrum,
the potential fluctuations go down in that place because you can.
To put it another way, to take the slow log round to the zero is the same as taking p to the ascension. Because it doesn't matter when you evaluate your 2-point correlation.
But
you take slow log parameter to zero, what you're doing is making everything constant. So then this will surely.
Just H. The modes are not constant.
It seems like if you decrease the slow log parameter, your effect should also decrease. Now, when you calculate the power spectrum for curvature fluctuations, there is a 1 over epsilon that comes in, and that could conceivably, so you've got the power of 1 over epsilon, you've got an epsilon in your effect, and the two could cancel. But then what I'm saying is your P naught no longer has the 1 over epsilon in it, that 1 over epsilon has been canceled. So your P naught is now on the order of the tensor fluctuations, the not enhanced, it's just H now instead of H over epsilon.
I guess the problem is that, so let's just multiply everything. It looks like theta and epsilon are going against each other. Why do we expect them? What do we expect them to do? Because now let's say I get the one across, I decrease epsilon.
Mm-hmm.
So the correction is now is P naught times theta, so P naught is going.
What's the, so this slow, it's a number.
It's roughly H dot, yeah.
H dot over H squared.
Some dimensionless.
It actually is minus H dot over H squared. But it's also related to phi dot, because phi and H are related to.
So it's
not
dimensionless.
It's a dimensionless. We don't have an exact measurement for it because we don't have tensor ones yet. But it's generally thought to be less than.
So in the power spectrum, what it does is just changes the overall scale.
In standard inflation, when you have the production of tensor modes and the production of scalar modes, the production of scalar modes is enhanced by a power of 1 over epsilon.
But it's the same for all cases.
It's the same. Well, epsilon has a slide running in it, but every time you run it, it goes to a second order in the slow roll approximation. So epsilon dot is second order
mm-hmm.
in slow roll, so it's usually even smaller than epsilon.
So it's an overall modulation of the power spectrum to the first order.
Mm-hmm. To first order of epsilon is an overall modulation of the power spectrum relative to the energy scale of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
The two things that go into the power spectrum are the energy scale of inflation and epsilon.
But the structure of power spectrum comes from just because from your solutions, from your the reason, the thing that you are in the D-sitter. You have these modes which are time dependent. So is that what gives you the structure of power spectrum?
The modes that are time dependent? Sorry.
Because you are in a time dependent background. So the solution. So if you leave out the V part, you'll still get this power spectrum, right? No?
Leave out the what part?
The potential.
No.
Well, almost, right? I mean, you get the de Sitter solution, which is H squared over KQ.
Yeah.
And then you get the modification that goes on the speckle index, but to convert it to curvature, right? Which is the step, somehow we're confused.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, it's easy to calculate the scalar field fluctuations and convert to curvature.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow you've done everything in one step because you're not coupling things, and so step where you translate the curvature is raising the agent from pure to center, and that's always proportional to slow over. So that's what I'm saying.
Oh, that's okay. Now I understand because just at the level of the scalar field, I mean, I don't I wasn't seeing it at the level of the scalar field, because if it's time dependent, how will this go away? If the modes.
That's right, but what's observable?
Yeah, as you said, that when you relate it to the tensor fields, I'm not really clear how calculations go. I did follow this standard book by Scott Donaldson. I cannot answer your question offhand that is there really, but why do you then expect this 1 over this epsilon 2 of, because or because you think, okay, in the tensor it should, in the metric perturbations there should be some.
Well, no, it's just, it looks like your effect, if you decrease the time dependence of phi,
mm-hmm.
your effect should decrease as well, because your entire effect is contingent on phi evolving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't see that dependence in your final answer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're saying that there might be a cancellation that's already occurred.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible, except that then, you know, your p naught normally would also change if you slowed down the field and kept the energy scale constant. Inflation p naught would change. And so if you've already canceled that out, then that p naught isn't actually the scalar amplitude anymore. It's more, it's closer related to the tensor amplitude.
Well, maybe there's some approximation which is done which is not justified. Because
I would expecting it to be multiplying the coefficient.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
No. Oh.
Yeah, I guess I expect it to live in the curve. I expect it to be in the quadratic term.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm. I expect it to multiply the quadratic term. Yeah. I mean, I can see that. Okay, so if you dial down epsilon. Let's assume that your effect at the linear level should also be linear in epsilon. You dial down epsilon, you dial up p naught, assuming it's still buried in there. You dial down your effect, assuming it's there. But what you really are looking for in terms of entropy is a kind of a delta p over p,
yeah.
which is going to cancel again. So your your fractional variation, I still think, should be dependent.
I think this is the game. If you keep theta just like that, there has to be negation.
There has to be what?
It is gauge dependent. Yeah. It's theta dependent. That's the problem. So if I have phi dot times theta or something like that, because then if I decrease the epsilon of theta, I'm doing the same thing. But now if I increase theta,
you're putting in a gauge. In time. Yeah,
yeah. That would be another way of saying it should be
there. Some kind of, there should be some kind of theta dot dependence.
Mm-hmm. Only theta dot dependence or theta?
I mean, theta dot is related to all the other
quantities.
I mean, theta dot's related to H
dot.
Oh, actually,
it's
phi dot. Sorry, phi dot. Phi dot.
Thank you.